Welcome to the Money and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Nelson. My mission to empower millennial couples to make money moves that won't just improve your financial health, but strengthen your marriage as well. In this podcast, I share stories, tips, and tricks, both from my experience as a certified financial planner and from my own marriage, to help you and your spouse kick financial anxiety to the curb and use your money to create the lives you love together. Let's get started. All right, welcome back to this week's episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. Today, we are going to be talking about change, because there is nothing that affects the state of your financial plan quite like change does, right? And there's a lot of different kinds of change, right? There are the changes in your life that you might expect, right? Buying a home, getting married, starting a family, retirement, so on. Obviously, those changes are going to have an impact on your financial state. There are the life changes that you have that you don't expect, right? That will pop up from time to time, whether it's new job opportunities on the positive front, layoffs on the negative front, right? Bonuses, inheritances, right? There's all sorts of things that are kind of changes that directly apply to you that can come up from time to time that you might not expect. But then there are the bigger, broader changes, right? Things that are purely outside of your control that affect just the U.S. economy in general, that nonetheless, right, even though they're not directly tied to you, are things that will affect your financial situation, right? A change that, for example, a change that we've seen in the past year or two as of the time of this recording is inflation, right? Not too long ago, inflation was really, really high. It was the big kind of focal point that people were talking about how it should affect your investment strategies, how it affected your day-to-day cash flow situations, right? That's something that was not in your control, right? But was a change that directly affected the financial situations of most people. And so those are the kind of changes that I want to talk about today, right? These changes that are broader and a little bit out of your control and how they should inform your strategy and how to think about your financial plan in the context of these changes, right? The three areas we're going to talk about are frankly the three that I get the most questions about. College savings for your kids, not for student loans, but in terms of your kids saving for college, retirement savings, and Social Security. The first big change I want to talk about is college savings. You know, I've had a lot of conversations about saving for college lately with my clients, or most of the clients who have found me, maybe not so much over the past year or so, but before that, have been engaged in newlywed couples, right? That was the primary focus of my work up until relatively recently. And so people come to me when they're engaged, newly married. A few years later, they start to have kids. And so I don't even know how many babies my clients have had over the past 12 or 18 months, but it's a pretty high number. So I've had a lot of conversation about college savings. And the question people always ask is, you know, how much, right? How much should I save for my kids' college? And to me, it's the hardest question to answer. Of all the different financial planning topics that I cover with my clients, right? And I cover just about everything that people are dealing with. The question of how much to save for college, in my opinion, is the hardest one to answer. Not because of the mathematics involved, it's actually a pretty straightforward mathematical question to answer, but because I think of all the different financial planning domains that are out there, I think this is the one that's the most likely to change over the next couple of decades. And it's not going to change tomorrow, it's not going to change next year probably, but over the next 18 to 22 years, right, which is around the time you need to be thinking about this if you were going to have a child now, I think it's there's a decent chance that the way we pay for college is going to change during that time, both because of just the underlying like sustainability of what we have going on right now. Like when you look at the student loan statistics for how much people have borrowed over the past couple of decades, it's not a pretty picture. And it's, in my opinion, it's actually getting worse since student loan payments have restarted over the past several months. And just thinking through whether the current inflation rate for college is actually going to be sustainable and tenable for people over the next few decades. Like I think at some point we're going to run into an issue there. And just in general, with the political climate, right? We already have had major presidential candidates, maybe not in this presidential election cycle in 2024, but in the past couple presidential election cycles, right? We've already had people talking about things like free public college, et cetera, right? I don't know what's going to happen on that front, right? But I think that those sorts of conversations are going to be had more and more and more as the cost of college continues to grow. And so it becomes a difficult question of what is life going to look like 18 years from now, where we're going to actually be paying for your kids' college? Like, how much do we truly need to set aside? And like I said, I think that's the area of your financial situation that's the most likely going to change in the next couple of years. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to. And if saving for your kids' college is one of your most important goals, then I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, right? But what you might want to think through is the vehicle with which you were using, right? The most common college savings vehicle that is out there today is the 529 account. We're not going to go into the ins and outs of how 529 accounts work on this episode, but 529 accounts are investment accounts specifically designed for education savings, primarily college. Also, some like private high school expenses can qualify as well. And the idea is that money that you put in those accounts are tax advantaged when it comes to college savings. If you don't use the money for college, right, it can continue to grow in the long run, which I see people do if they don't use the 529 that they have for whatever reason. Or you can take the money out and pay a big tax penalty on it. And so obviously we want to avoid that if we can. And so I often talk with millennial, maybe even some Gen Z couples who are a little bit hesitant to go really aggressive in terms of saving in a 529 account specifically, because they're afraid of overfunding it. And generally, I actually don't think that's necessarily a bad call, right? It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be using them, right? Frankly, just with the reality of the childcare situation in the U.S., what I often see couples do that works pretty well is contribute what you can for college savings in the first couple of years after you have your child. And then as things like childcare expenses start to go away, as they start school, then it just from a cash flow perspective, it can be a lot easier to ramp up the college savings front. I see that happen a lot. Obviously with compound interest is a thing, right? The earlier you start saving for college, the easier it will be. But just from the reality of many couples' situation, I find that often happens, right? Is that they aren't saving super, super aggressively for college in the first few years. While they're paying for childcare, but then ramp it up beyond that point. So if that's your situation, right, and you're saving a little bit or saving what you can for college right now, yeah, I think that a 529 plan is probably fine for you, right? But as you get that account growing and more dollars start to pop up, like you don't really want to overfund that account, right? There are mechanisms that are in place that have come up in the past couple of years, actually, where you're able to move some money from a 529 into a Roth IRA down the long run. But the dollar amounts are limited for that, and it actually takes place of your regular contributions to your Roth IRA. So, there's reasons why you might not want to rely on that. It's possible that if there are some big systemic changes with how we pay for college down the road, then the withdrawals from 529s might be more flexible, right? But we just don't know ultimately. And so I think that contributing what you're able to for starters in a 529 account so that you have something set aside in a specific college 529 account is a good idea, right? There's nothing wrong with that. If you're able to really start saving aggressively for college, like you might want to think about how much of that literally should go into a 529, right? There's no rule that says your college expenses have to come from 529 accounts, right? They can come from other just generic investment accounts that you have, right? There might be some tax inefficiencies in doing that, right? But like the degree to which you want to weigh the pros and cons of whether you're kind of taking a little bit of a risk on that front versus like risking overfunding the 529 and having a big tax issue when you withdraw, there are trade-offs to consider there. And the moral of the story is that it's worth at least thinking through how things might change down the road when it comes to the vehicles you were using to save for your kids' college, right? There's not a right or wrong answer. And we don't know what's going to happen. And that's the point, right? The idea that I would want to convey though is trying to be flexible as possible with the way that you're saving for college. It's not that you shouldn't save for college, because you absolutely should, because things might not change, right? But specifically with 529s, I've seen couples get a little bit less excited about relying on them for college savings, particularly like for really young kids where there is a long time between now and when you'll need it. So it's just something to think through, right? Again, not a right or wrong answer. Who knows what's going to happen? But that is a change that I think could potentially happen in the next few decades. Shifting gears to the retirement savings side, right? The The question I often get about how things will change for retirement for younger couples actually primarily has to do with Roth IRAs and Roth 401ks. Because the Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, we've talked about this on the podcast before, right? They are essentially tax-free growth for retirement, right? Money you put into a Roth IRA, you can't deduct the contribution today, but it grows tax-free. Any money that you take out in the long run will be tax-free in retirement. And the question that often comes up is like, yeah, okay, like, do we really believe that? Do we really think that that's something that's actually going to happen? Like, what are the odds that, that Congress kills the Roth IRA or tries to tax the Roth IRA down the road? And there, you know, anything could happen in theory, but I actually think that it's very unlikely that we're going to run into literal income taxation on Roth IRAs down the road. I think it's very, very unlikely for a few reasons, right? First and foremost, Roth IRAs are pretty popular, right? Congress doesn't like to make changes that are going to be unpopular with things that are pretty popular. I think it's politically going to be very, very difficult, right? Particularly, any sort of political changes to the retirement landscape where it primarily affects retirees are difficult to do. And so I think that's unlikely to happen. The other reason that I think it's very unlikely that Congress does away with Roth accounts in the future is that, frankly, from the way that the Congress does math, Roth IRAs are actually really appealing from them. Because what it means, when you make a contribution to a Roth IRA, you're paying taxes on the money that's being contributed now. You're not taking the tax deduction now, which means they get more tax money to deal with in their budget now. And it grows tax-free in the long run, right? Now, they might get more tax revenue over your life if you were to pay more taxes on the money you're withdrawing down the road, but they don't look at it that way, right? Like Congress likes quick things, right? Like quick wins for them. And it actually is even more formal than that. But the way the Congressional Budget Office looks at budget bills in terms of like, as they make changes to different things, what's the impact of the budget on the budget, they only look at a forward 10-year window. And so if you're 30 years old and they're looking at making changes to the way you're contributing to retirement, right? Not taking the tax deduction today is really, really appealing for them because they're only looking at the next 10 years, right? If you take a tax deduction today and they make a lot more tax money from you down the road when you're 65, 75, 85 years old, that might be good in the long run for them, but they're not even looking past 10 years. And so from their perspective, they would much, much rather have you not take the tax deduction today by using the Roth account, right? It's a little bit of silly math, right, on the congressional side, but like, frankly, the Roth accounts are actually really appealing from a revenue perspective with the way our government looks at revenue. So I actually think the bigger change that might happen might be on their traditional 401k side. It might very well be the case that there are more limits put on traditional 401ks and traditional IRAs down the road than there would be on the Roth IRA side, right? Who knows, right? We have no idea what's going to happen. I know that, I mean, I wrote an article 5 years ago about will Congress kill the Roth IRA? And all that's happened since that point in time is that the Roth IRA has become more ubiquitous, right? There have been more ways added to be able to get money into Roth accounts, right, than there were when I wrote that article. So I think it's unlikely. I would not base your financial decisions now on the idea that the Roth IRA might go away in the future. There could always be tax changes in the future, right, to your tax rates. Certainly, the other thing that I think might end up happening down the road, this is really kind of not something I would even worry about right now, but if Congress wanted to find a way to get you to pay taxes from your Roth IRAs down the road, I don't think that it's likely they're going to tax the money coming out like income, right? Because I think it's very, very unlikely that would fly. But we are one of the only countries in the world that does not have some sort of what's called a value added tax or a VAT, which is more complicated than I want to get into in today's episode. It functions a little bit like a sales tax. It's a tax on added production value at each step of the supply chain. Most countries in the world have that tax. That is not something we have at all. And that would be like, if we were to ever pass something like that, that would tax your consumption, which indirectly would like end up with you having paying taxes with whatever money you're using. That could involve a Roth IRA. I think like changes like that in the long run might be more likely. Again, not something I would like be actively planning on now. From my perspective, Roth IRAs are a perfectly safe thing to use, right? From a tax perspective, whether it's beneficial or not really depends on what your tax rate is today and what you expect your tax rate will be when you retire. And there are some income limitations on a Roth IRA, which we've talked about here before as well. But that's just what I like. Again, like that's a change I wouldn't necessarily be worried about. And the third change that I would not necessarily need to be worried about that I hear people worry about all the time is also related to retirement, and that is with Social Security, right? Lots of negative headlines about the financial future of Social Security, right? And so I often, when I am talking to younger couples, which I will say is like younger Gen Xers, millennials, some of the older Gen Z folks that I'm talking to these days, often I'll have people say like, leave Social Security out of my retirement plan completely, right? It's not an uncommon thing for me to hear because people are worried that Social Security might not be viable, right? It's projected to run, like Social Security fund is projected to run out of money sometime in the next handful of years. Like, what are we going to do? Like, why are we assuming we're going to get Social Security? And I actually do not agree with that. I think it is very, very likely that you will get some form of Social Security when you retire. Once again, right, making changes like cutting benefits like that or eliminating benefits for retirees is very, very unpopular. I do not tell people to assume they're not going to get Social Security at all. I think it is, I mean, almost 100% chance that some changes will happen to the Social Security, to the way that we handle Social Security in this country between now and when you retire. But that doesn't mean the benefit won't be there, right? And there are any number of changes that could happen. First and foremost, like the Social Security tax could go up, right? That is a change that could happen, certainly. What is probably more likely to happen is that the cap on Social Security taxes will be removed. So, all of your, like if you're a high income earner, right, you likely are not paying Social Security tax on all of your income, right? Once your income hits a certain dollar amount, you don't pay any more Social Security taxes on that. It's the one tax that we have that actually gets better as you make more money, because like when you pay a flat rate up on that until you hit the threshold. The threshold changes every year based on inflation and all that. Once your income goes above that point, you don't pay Social Security taxes at all. And I think that frankly, the easiest to stomach politically thing that will change is they're just going to remove that cap and say that you're taxed on Social Security at your entire income levels as a way to potentially fund Social Security down the road. I think the change like that is very, very likely at some point. Again, not necessarily something I'd be planning on or planning for right now, but it's just something to keep in mind, right? Like there are ways, there are actually relatively easy ways to start shoring up the Social Security system so that it's not going to go completely bankrupt on you. Will benefits potentially be reduced from what they are today? Maybe, right? Will things like cost of living increases be slowed or eliminated for Social Security like that? There have been plenty of years where there haven't done cost of living increases for Social Security. I think stuff like that might happen. Will they potentially increase the full retirement age for Social Security, which right now for most people is 67, but you can delay filing until age 70? Is it possible that we end up with a Social Security full retirement age of 70? Like, yeah, like they absolutely might implement that for people who are below a certain age. Like they won't make that change immediately, probably for people who are close to the age range that they're looking at. But I think it's possible that sort of change would happen. All of which is a long way to say, like, I think you can, like, you don't need to worry about whether Social Security will be there at all for you, right? You might need to worry about whether you're going to pay more for Social Security down the road, and or maybe your benefits are reduced in some way, shape, or form from what they currently would be. But I do assume that Social Security is going to be there for people when they retire. I think that is a relatively safe assumption to make. Look, right, all these changes, right? Changes that could potentially affect college savings, changes that could affect the retirement vehicles that you use, changes that could affect your Social Security down the road, right? All these things are not in your control. And so from a planning perspective, in terms of taking action on it, right? There's a few things, right? First and foremost, right? I would not let the fear of future changes deter you from taking some form of action, right? You should not just completely discount the idea of college savings because the way we pay for college might change down the road. No, like I would continue to take action according to what your goals in that area are. Now, what might change is the vehicles that you use, right? Like maybe you change your strategy to give you a little bit more flexibility just in case, or you think through what paying for some college expenses from your cash flow when your child turns 18 years old, rather than trying to have the full amount saved up front. Maybe you think about that a little bit because there's no rule that says that you need to have 100% of your college savings goal funded before your child even starts college. You can pay along the way from your savings down the road, right? There's lots of different things that you can consider doing, right? But the idea is you don't want to let these potential future changes throw off your strategy. It may be a reason to build in some flexibility down the road. And the final piece of that is that you know, you should always be revising the plan that you have, right? Back a handful of years ago, the primary way I was working with people is as I was writing one-time financial plans for them and giving them to couples and sending them on their merry way. You might be listening to this and you may have gone through that you know, 4 to 6 month process with me. I'm not doing a lot of that anymore, frankly, because what happens is that, right, those kind of one-time financial plans get outdated very, very, very quickly, right? Whether it's from changes in your life, either that were expected or unexpected, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, or there are just changes in the underlying economic market, or, you know, like there's all sorts of things that can change that make just a static plan document miss the mark with people, right? Instead, to me, it's this process of going through planning and constantly reevaluating to make sure you're staying on track as things change. That's the most important piece, right? Whether you're working with a financial planner like me, whether you're just doing this on your own, right? This idea of committing to the process of planning to me is really, really important. So that's it for this episode. Speaking of being in a state of change, right? My Pacesetter Planning, my company, is in a little bit of limbo right now in the form of our website right now is under renovations, let's say. I launched my company just to give you a date that you can kind of anchor in your mind. I launched my company in November of 2016, the day before the 2016 presidential election. It's been a long time. If you think back to how long ago the 2016 presidential election feels, I've been around a long time, and I have not updated my website since then, right? which is way, way, way too long from a website perspective. My website as it has stood right for the past several years has looked a little bit outdated. It is undergoing a top to bottom facelift. That speaks a little bit more to the type of work that I do with people now, right? My website right now is primarily marketed to engage newlywed couples, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in this episode. I still do work with those people, but like I work with couples who are fighting about money, trying to get on the same financial page, like a lot more now. I think in a lot of ways, this podcast has outpaced my website in terms of speaking to the work that I do. And so right now we are in limbo. We are in the final stages of going through all the revisions that we need to get this website up and running. It will not be live when this episode is recorded, which is why I've gone back to the old style of episode because the current state is kind of locked in. I can't be publishing new content on it right now until we get all the changes finalized. But hopefully by the time the next episode airs 2 weeks from now, I think the new website will be live by then. If not, it's going to be very, very close. So stay tuned. I'll have some new exciting stuff to share when it comes around. But it's been a long time coming that this website this website overhaul. It is way, way, way overdue. It was birthed in 2016. It was a long time ago. So I'm excited to share the new site with you. Looking forward to getting that out to you in the next few weeks here. In the meantime, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully it gave you some things to think about, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. If you want to learn more, you can access my favorite money exercise for free if you head to paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Again, that's paysetterplanning.com /moneyandmarriage. Get your access today, and I'll see you next time.